From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. On today's show, jazz pianist and composer Jackie Byard joins us for a live concert. His playing has the wit of Fats Waller and the adventurousness of Henry Cowell, and he composed and performed the Fresh Air theme music that you're hearing now. Also today, I'll talk with movie sound designer Alan Splett. He did the sound for the David Lynch movies Blue Velvet and Eraserhead. We go to Chicago, home of the Chicago Blues Festival, for a performance by blues guitarist Homesick James. And critic-at-large Laurie Stone shares some thoughts on sex in the era of AIDS. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. We have a live performance for you today with jazz pianist and composer Jackie Byard. His playing brings together the rhythms of early jazz like ragtime and stride with modern and even avant-garde harmonies. That's why jazz critic Francis Davis called him an uncategorizable maverick. Byard has recorded many solo albums as well as albums with his small groups and his big band, the Apollo Stompers. He's played with innovative musicians and composers like Eric Dolphy and Charles Mingus, and he was the pianist with the Duke Ellington Orchestra during the last year of Ellington's life when he wasn't performing much. Jackie Byard is a favorite of those of us who work on Fresh Air, which is why we commissioned him to write and perform our theme music. A lot of listeners ask us who plays the Fresh Air theme, so you can consider the next half hour an elaborate answer to that question. Playing with Jackie Byard today on tuba and bass is Ralph Hamparian. He's also the bassist with the Apollo Stompers, and he also is featured on the Fresh Air theme. Welcome both of you to Fresh Air. I have a request to kick things off. Can you play your piece, Jackie, John Arthur?
I thought you'd never ask. Okay, now? All right, here we go.
Great.
Oh.
One of the things, Jackie Byrd, I love about your playing is how you get these great stride kind of rhythms in it and these really modern harmonies. I wonder if there was a time when jazz modernists thought that early jazz was kind of corny, and if you ever had to defend your interest in it.
Well, I felt that way about jazz at one time. I thought it was corny. I thought Louis Armstrong was corny, and he was the pits.
Really?
I really didn't dig him. And as a matter of fact, Roy Eldridge, too. I thought he was kind of corny because we come up in the era of Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. Oh, that was so great. What are these guys doing? Louis Armstrong, man, they're old-fashioned. We used to call them Coleman Hawkins, even. And then sooner, I'd say after about 3 or 4 years of becoming a bebopper, then we became involved in the history of music and what it was all about and found out it was a little different.
So who did you first start getting interested in when you went back?
All of them. Well, because the influence was there. Because when I was a child, I remember my uncle was rehearsing with a band, and the piano player used to play like Fats Waller. And I had picked that up from him, playing like Fats Waller. But the band that I played with, they didn't like Fats Waller. They liked King Cole. So that was the kick then, you know.
Well, you have an incredibly broad repertoire of original songs, jazz standards, and also songs that have never really been admitted into the jazz repertoire. And I'm going to ask you to play a pop tune for us now, Besame Mucho.
This tune is synonymous all over the world. I play it all over the world, and everybody knows it. And what's it mean? Besame Mucho.
Kiss me a lot.
Kiss me a lot?
Yep.
No.
It's Spanish.
Oh, Spanish? I thought you got something about love or something.
Besame, kiss me.
Kiss me? Okay. That'd be cool though, huh? notes. I gave the bass player a solo.
Hey.
Yeah, I had to psych his mind so he could keep playing for me. So he could play. A lot of piano players don't do that.
You also snuck in summertime.
Summertime,
yeah.
Because summertime I'm happy, summertime I'm good.
I love the songs that end up in your repertoire. Besame Mucho, you've even played Ode to Billy Joe.
Yeah.
But you do crazy things with it. Do people assume that you're playing it tongue-in-cheek, and do you think of yourself as making fun of the songs?
No, not necessarily. It's just part of our approach, that's all. That being that eclectically involved, I guess. You can put it like that.
You play some songs that I think of just being so corny, like Besame Mucho, and you make it so terrific.
Well, yeah, see, that's another thing, too. See, when you're playing a minor key, there are many variations you can become involved with as far as the classical era is concerned, if you notice. You know, anytime you play anything in a minor key, you can get away with a lot of things like that, musically anyway.
We're featuring a concert today with pianist Jackie Byard and bassist Ralph Hamperian. In a minute, Ralph is going to switch over from the bass to the tuba to play one of Jackie's original rags. But first, we're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is produced live from WHYY in Philadelphia and is distributed by National Public Radio.
We're featuring a performance on today's show with pianist and composer Jackie Byard and bassist Ralph Hamperian, who has also brought his tuba. And by the way, these are also the musicians who perform the Fresh Air theme, which Jackie Byard composed. Well, I'm going to ask you to both play one of your original rags, Jackie. This is you want to say anything about it before you play it?
Thank you. Yes, this we call it the L.H. Gatewalk Rag. And it's supposed to depict the nonsense of Laurel and Hardy, because I was commissioned to write this for the Springfield Symphony. And they asked me to write a ragtime piece. I said, could I write something original? They said, sure. And so this is the outcome of Laurel and Hardy. It's supposed to depict their nonsense. There was a film, this concert, they were showing films of all of cartoons and different comedians during the comics, you call them? Yeah, during the 20s and the 30s, the movie. And this was part of it. And this, they were musicians. I think Ollie played the clarinet, and what's the name, played a small instrument, a piccolo. The fat guy played the piccolo. Funny, but well, anyway, here we go.
Thank you.
barely got through that. Woo!
That was one of Jackie Byard's original compositions, the LH Gatewalk Rag. You know, I was going to ask you if you ever wish that you were in the big band era so you could play with a big band, but of course I realized you actually play with a big band. You have your own big band.
Yes, and that's one of the greatest delights for all of us, I guess, when you can get 17 bodies together to perform these things, and that's without the use of electronics. And it's a glorious sight. Even watching some of the symphony orchestras, sure, it's a glorious sight when you see all these people performing and playing that music of whoever writes it. And for me, it's a special pleasure because it satisfies my narcissistic temperament. Is that what it is?
Narcissistic?
Yeah, it's satisfied. I really get great pleasure out of hearing it with the band. And you don't have to work as hard, neither. This is a lot of work. This is unbelievable. But it's nice, though. I enjoy it. And what we had done this year, it's at one time, like compositions like this was more or less the beginning of popular music here in America.
The rag.
Yeah, see, back in 1890, and all these ragtime musicians were playing, and then from that we got Sousa and all the different type of military bands. I don't know, what do they call them? Marching bands, yeah.
Can I ask you to play something else, and would you play one of the pop songs that you play and in a kind of avant-garde way?
Yeah, I got something for you. This song called In the Land of Make-Believe. Well, we'll really do this up.
This is what a big Chuck Mangione hit, right?
Yeah, and I was criticized for playing it. What are you playing that for? I said, because I can get off on it, you know? Yeah, you know, and it's called The Land of Make-Believe. And that's what we're trying to, it's believe. You can't believe. Can you believe this?
There are many worlds, yeah, fantasies, the record title.
Yeah. Here we go. Thank you.
Absolutely nobody plays a Chuck Mangione hit the way you do.
Yeah. It, like I say, you can really get off on it, you know? Yeah, because I think it was some piano players' wives. Why you play that?
You must get that a lot, even for Bessie Me Mucho, probably.
Yeah. And I enjoy those tunes because, you know, Sweet Georgia Brown was a pop tune at one time. And it's the same as Atlanta Make Believe. It's a pop tune, and it can become the standard, what they call standards.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I just have to ask you if you would play the Fresh Air theme for us, which you composed and which you both perform for
us. I thought you'd never ask me. Here we go. Damn, the time sure flies. That makes me think of that clock with the wings on it. You ever see that? The clock with the wings? And one, two, three, four.
Unfortunately, out of time. It's been so much fun to have you both here. And my guests have been pianist and composer Jackie Byard and bassist Ralph Hamperian. Ralph is the bassist in Jackie's big band, the Apollo Stompers. Jackie Byard's recent albums are on the Soul Note record label, but of course you can also hear them each day performing the Fresh Air theme, which Jackie wrote. We thank the Wilmington Piano Company for providing us the Bösendorfer piano used in today's concert. This is Fresh Air. On our next show, I'll talk with Armistead Maupin. His satire and gay and straight lifestyles is a daily feature in the San Francisco Examiner, so I hope you can join us. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. This is NPR, National Public Radio. From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Coming up, film sound designer Alan Splett tells how his work adds an eerie dimension to movies. He's collaborated with David Lynch on Blue Velvet, The Elephant Man, and Eraserhead. Blues enthusiasts from around the country are in Chicago for the Chicago Blues Festival. One of the performers, Homesick James, will join us to show off his slide guitar style. Critic at large Laurie Stone will discuss sex, AIDS, and new theater about sexual mores, and we'll have a news update from National Public Radio in Washington. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. Here's the news. This is Fresh Air. Coinciding with the Chicago Blues Festival, we've invited a blues musician to join us from Chicago.
I'm Homesick James, born in Sonoma, Tennessee, 1910, April 30th.
Homesick James doesn't even remember how he got the name Homesick, and he thinks it doesn't really fit because he doesn't consider any place his permanent home. Homesick learned to play blues and slide guitar in Florida. He's played with Big Bill Brunzi and Sonny Williams, and in 1929, he recorded the song he's going to play for us now.
California, sweet home Chicago. just like two and two and four. Come on now, baby, don't you try to make me late. Come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Back to the land of California, sweet home Chicago.
Titled Sweet Home Chicago, I did that quite some years back. And now I'm thinking to go into the slide guitar for a little bit. We're going into some of the old tunes that moves out a little bit. Thank you, very kindly. Thank you, thank you.
Homesick James was recorded at the NPR studios in Chicago. He's in that city for the Chicago Blues Festival. He'll perform in Davenport, Iowa, July 3rd and 4th at the Mississippi Valley Blues Fest. This is Fresh Air. Alan Splett creates sounds. He always listens for the right sound. Splett is a sound designer for movies. He won an Academy Award for his work on Carol Ballard's film Black Stallion. He also worked with Ballard on Never Cry Wolf. In 1969, Splett met a young filmmaker named David Lynch, and his life changed. He's worked with Lynch on all his films, from early shorts to Hollywood features. Lynch's first film was Eraserhead, followed by The Elephant Man, Dune, and most recently, Blue Velvet. I asked Alan Splett how he and David Lynch first got together.
Well, I was working in Philadelphia. I was working at an industrial film house, which is no longer there now. And David had who lived nearby, and he had done a grant film for the American Film Institute, which was 35 minutes of 16 millimeter silent footage. He had no sound recording on it. And so he came to our company to have some sound put on the film. And by a quirk of fate, he wound up working with me. And we spent about, almost 3 months on the film. And we made all our sound effects for the film. We went around the company and made everything and put this whole track together. And the AFI loved the film and took David as a fellow, and they hired me as their staff sound person. And so that got David and I both out to the West Coast. That's how we both got out to Los Angeles.
Let's talk about your film, Eraserhead, mm-hmm. which is a cult classic now. The movie's like a bad dream about urban life where everything is rancid. It's right. a real bleak right. movie. Now, you created a psychological sound environment for that. And in the background, there's this constant, vaguely industrial sound. Let's play a little bit of it.
Okay.
Remind ourselves of how it sounded. What was the psychological effect you were trying to achieve with the background sound?
Essentially, it's just a sort of surreal urban environment that's always like pervasive and omnipresent in a sense.
The sounds in it don't sound exactly like anything I've ever heard before, but it sounds industrial to me. Did you take familiar sounds and make them into this unfamiliar pattern?
We had an old gas heater in the editing room where I was working. It was just which had a big metal case on it. So one day we stuck a microphone down in the bottom of it, a little tiny microphone in the bottom of this thing, and David was blowing into the top of it. And we just got a lot of really strange sounds that way. And another time we floated an old water cooler bottle. Remember the big 5-gallon bottles when they used to be glass? Now they're plastic. We floated that in a bathtub and stuck a microphone inside that and got a really ethereal type of bubbly sound. So we basically made all the sounds ourselves, but they all had organic roots. Nothing was created electronically. And I think that's one reason why it has the presence that it does, because they are real sounds, even though they've been changed.
I want to take you to another movie that you did with David Lynch, Blue Velvet.
Yes.
There's a scene in Blue Velvet where the hero, who's from a small town, has become involved with a woman who represents all his darkest sexual fantasies. And they're making love, and she says to him, "Hurt me, hit me." And she said that before, and he's refused to do it. But now he does it. He hits her. He hits her hard. Let's play that and hear how it sounds.
Okay.
Hit me!
No! No!
Get away! Get away from my bed! Get away!
That's certainly a smack that reverberates. How did you get it? Was that just a regular slap across somebody's face?
No, we tried that. One of the fellas, my assistant, is a pretty strapping guy, and we tried slapping him on the back. We tried all sorts of stuff like that, and that didn't work. But we were over at a friend's house one day doing some recording, some just odd sound effects, and he happened to have a pumpkin on the floor. So it was just one of those sort of lucky accidents. We took the pumpkin and we started, first we hit it with our hands, and then we found a metal ruler on his desk, and we started slapping it with a metal ruler.
Now, what would have been wrong with just a regular slap? It's not convincing enough?
It's interesting that when you hear it with your ear, of course it sounds convincing, but when you record it with the microphone, it just loses. It just, there's something lost there. It doesn't have, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Just psychologically, it doesn't convey enough energy. I can't quite tell you why. It's just funny. We all thought that a slapping someone hard on the back, for instance, would do it, but it didn't. It didn't have the. It just didn't have enough starch.
When you started working on movies with David Lynch, you were using all real sounds. You didn't use synthesizers at all. Now that there's so many synthesizers that are available and computer-generated sounds, do you like to use any of that, or do you still stick with real sound?
I don't like sounds that are artificially created, electronically created. That others can do that. I'm not interested in that at all. There are synthesizers now, though, that will sample real sounds, and you can then process them in the synthesizer as if you were doing electronic sounds. And I've thought about getting one of those synthesizers, but I haven't bothered with it yet. I've not needed it.
There's a lot of sounds that exist in your average house or apartment. And I'm thinking, you know, when I'm at home, the refrigerator's humming. If it's winter, then the radiator pipes are banging.
Yeah.
And there's always an appliance that seems to have a 60-cycle hum to it.
Yeah.
And then maybe one of the faucets is dripping. Do you hear all those sounds a lot? Are you very conscious of them in the course
of
the
day? Yeah. Something clicks in your head. You know, if a sound is happening and it's interesting, it somehow or other just penetrates the consciousness. It's not like you go to a place and you say, well, I'm going to listen to all the sounds there. It's not a conscious thing. And if it is like an interesting toilet flush, or in the case of some good friends of ours, they had a really interesting pipe knock when they turned their water off. They made this really weird groaning sound. It's just something that you suddenly hear. It just pops into your head, and you say, my God, that's a great sound. I got to go record that.
Are there any sounds that drive you crazy?
Yeah, well, for me, it's generally just urban noise. I don't like urban noise. I much prefer woods and, you know, fields and streams and quiet country atmosphere.
This is the man speaking who did the sound for Eraserhead.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I can't create urban environments, but I don't like them. I mean, I can create them on film, but I don't like to be in them.
What movie are you working on now?
Well, it's a film called The Unbearable Lightness of Being. And it's based on a book by Milan Kundera, a Czech author.
What are the sound challenges you're working on with this movie?
Well, at the moment, I'm actually working more in the music area of it than I am the sound effects, though I will be doing the sound effects on the film, too. This is really exciting to me because it's the first time since my industrial film days that I've been involved in music. And it's really a whole new challenge. I'm not a composer. I don't compose music. But what we've been trying to do is to essentially score the entire film with the music of Leos Janáček, who was a Czech composer whose music probably most closely resembles the feeling textures of the book. That's about the only way I can describe it.
Okay. Alan Splett, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
Alan Splett talked to us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Listening to Fresh Air. You can hear full coverage of the news on today's All Things Considered. Renee Montaigne, who co-hosts the program, is joining us from Washington. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Terry.
What stories are you following today?
Well, tonight we take a look at the Six Days War 20 years later. That war with Egypt, of course, was a great victory for the Israelis, but it also handed Israel its greatest problem, what to do with the occupied territories and the 1.5 million Palestinian Arabs who now live there. We'll also have a wrap-up of the AIDS conference, a discussion of what we've learned from this week-long gathering of experts.
Who are you speaking speaking with?
Well, I spoke this afternoon to poet Philip Levine, winner of the second annual Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, which carries with it an award of $25,000. Not bad for a poet.
Well, thanks, Renee. Those stories and more are coming up on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. These days, sex is more complicated than it used to be. Our critic at large, Laurie Stone, has these reflections.
I don't think about sex anymore. I think about sex in the age of AIDS. The word sex alone provokes anxiety. Was it safe enough? Am I going to get it this time? Will eroticism ever again be free? Reality has lined up with my worst fears of punishment, and these days, when I see plays and movies or talk to friends about sex, I'm filtering everything through a scrim of worry and nostalgia. I felt these emotions keenly watching two plays currently running in New York. One was a revival of As Is, William Hoffman's treatment of AIDS, written in 1985. The other was Christopher Hampton's Les Liaisons Dangereuses, presented by the Royal Shakespeare Company. In the first moments of As Is, Rich announces he has AIDS. He writes short stories and manages a catering business. He adores double scotches and poppers and bars named after blacksmith equipment. When his glands swell and his diagnosis is confirmed, Chet, his current lover, departs. His straight brother, his only family, shuns him, and his business fails. No one trusts the food, even though he's not the cook. Only his ex-lover, Saul, offers to care for him, to take him as is. Hoffman knows how to dramatize a collective plight. That's a rare talent for an American playwright. He uses testimonies, tableaus, and collages of scenes to crack the play's naturalistic shell, and the technique duplicates the way the disease scores our community. Characters remember the first time they heard about the disease, where they were, what they were doing. There is misinformation. A caller to the AIDS hotline thinks American Indians are a risk group. And there are jokes. Question: what's the worst thing about getting AIDS? Answer: trying to convince your parents you're Haitian. I found the original production well acted, but a little too clean. It didn't go deeply enough into the ravages of the illness and the realities of gay life. The revival isn't as well performed, but it's stronger. Rich looks as awful as he feels, and now, due to some changes in the script, the play no longer explains gays to straights, but rather makes a simple, eloquent plea to everyone. Don't let people with AIDS suffer alone. Sex as a pleasurable act just about vanishes in As Is. The pleasure of sex has pretty much disappeared from media in general, although Dr. Ruth still urges us to go for it, with condoms, of course. Sexual conquest and gratification are the subjects of Les Liaisons Dangereuses, adapted from the 18th century French novel by Laclos. And one of the great delights of this play is seeing sex detached from our present hysteria. The Marquise and the Vicomte are two sexual gladiators who are also former lovers, and since part of their pleasure is causing other people pain, they succeed in corrupting several innocents. The set is a vast boudoir strewn with beds and couches. Lingerie and linens leap out of an oversized bureau. From the first minutes, the atmosphere is charged with sex. Sex fantasized and sex achieved. Sex as profession and as passion. The play is set in a swamp of dirty deals, and eventually egoists and victims suffer. But in comparison to the age of AIDS, this world seems safe, certainly remote. I got turned on watching people think about nothing but sex for 3 hours, sex without images of disease. In the age of AIDS, we need especially to float sometimes in pornotopic bliss, to take a vacation from the present by remembering the past and also imagining the future. We need to hold on to our knowledge of the pleasures of sex and not just feel the pain.
Productions of As Is can also be seen at the Studio Theater in Washington, D.C., and the Philadelphia Company in Philadelphia. Laurie Stone is a New York-based writer and critic and is a contributor to The Village Voice. Here's a preview of our next program. On our next show, I'll speak with political cartoonist Doug Marlette. His new book, There's No Business Like Soul Business, is about a less-than-holy evangelist, the Reverend Will B. Dunn. Jazz critic Francis Davis will review a new reissue by singer Tony Bennett, and television critic David Bianculli will discuss how the radio show A Prairie Home Companion translated to television. So I hope you can join us. We thank everyone who helps make Fresh Air possible.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Accommodations for Fresh Air's guests are provided by the Four Seasons Hotel, situated on Logan Square in the heart of Philadelphia's business and cultural district. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced.
Our senior producer is Danny Miller. Our producers are Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Naomi Person. Ed Doherty is the production assistant. Our engineer is Joyce Lieberman. Chris Spurgeon directs the show. Fresh Air's theme music is composed and performed by Jackie Byard. I'm Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. This is NPR, National Public Radio.